Well, Fáilte romhaibh, Fáilte go dtí, bel fairste. In 5 short years, the people of Ireland will commemorate the centenary of the Easter Rising. And it is our job as Republicans to map out where we want to be in 2016. And while 5 years may seem only a short period in which to bring about the sort of fundamental political, social, economic and constitutional change we want, but reflect for a moment on the changes made in the last 5 years. This time 5 years ago, the peace process was deadlocked. The DUP leadership had yet to sit down with Sinn Féin. Political institutions remained in what seemed permanent suspension, and the two governments seemed bereft of ideas to free up the process. The onus lay on us, the party driving the peace process forward, to take the initiative, salvage the process, and ensure that the potential of the Good Friday Agreement was not lost. So this time, 5 years ago, our negotiating team was preparing to head to St Andrews. And within 6 months, what people said was impossible had happened. The DUP and Ian Paisley were in power-sharing institutions with Sinn Féin and the other parties on the basis of equality. Republicans had taken another strategic initiative on policing, and fully functioning all-Ireland political architecture was up and running. Also, in the course of the 5 years from then, we have seen the Hillsborough Agreement and the transfer of powers in policing and justice away from London and onto the island of Ireland, another significant milestone on our journey. And also look at where we are as a party, the advances that we have made over that 5 year period. In 2006, when we gathered, would anybody have predicted an executive jointly led by myself and Peter Robinson seeing out a full term? Sinn Féin ministers making decisions around the executive table which impacted for the better on the thousands of ordinary people's lives. Would anybody here, hand in heart, seriously have suggested 5 years ago that Gerry Adams would be leading a Sinn Féin Oireachtas team of 14 TDs and 3 senators, and that Fianna Fáil would be in the position they now find themselves in? And I rehearse all of this not for the purposes of history, but for the purpose of showing what is possible. Change does not have to take decades. Political circumstances can be moulded and can be shaped, and can change can quickly happen. So that's the lesson of the past 5 years, and more importantly, it is the inspiration for the next 5 years. So how do we build a new republic? How do we continue to make change and at the same time deliver for ordinary people day and daily? Well, we continue to do what we're doing because Sinn Féin is the party of the new republic. We are the party with the vision and with the hope and indeed with the commitment. The worst trait, I believe, in any political leader is to aim low. It is much better to aim high and come up short than not try at all. And it seems to me that some political leaders in Ireland have waved the white flag. They accepted the loss of sovereignty. They accepted the IMF and the ECB, not necessarily because they wanted to, but because they hadn't the vision to look for another way. There is always another way, and there is always something better to aim for. And that is the way that we came at the Tory imposed cuts in the executive budget. Here, we could have rolled over. We could have agreed with the approach of others, but we decided on a different approach. And despite a lack of economic levers, we have managed to offset some of the worst of the Tory excesses. But it is by no means an ideal situation, and indeed many significant economic challenges lies ahead for our executive. But I am confident that working together in proper partnership, all of the parties around the executive table can play a role, on one hand in protecting the most vulnerable in our society, and on the other in sustaining and indeed creating new jobs for our people. Indeed, next week, myself and Peter Robinson will travel to the United States of America for a number of important meetings aimed at directly securing further foreign direct investment, and I am hopeful of further progress in this regard. And of course, yesterday, our executive acted to ensure that there would be no increase in student fees to take place during the lifetime of this Assembly. But we're not simply involved in institutions to mind the shop. As Republicans, we have cause, and indeed we have purpose, and have given the progress of recent years, we rightly carry great expectations of what we can achieve in the future. And those expectations go beyond simply Sinn Féin supporters or even those who want to see a united Ireland. The expectation of us to continue to succeed is indeed shared by many who don't ultimately share our primary political goal of unity and independence. But it is our duty to continue to reach out to unionists, and it is our duty to persuade them of the merits of a new republic and of their treasured place in it. In the 5 years between now and 2016, I want to see us lead a national conversation on the future of this island. We are hemorrhaging our young people to far-flung parts of the world in search of work. A combination of greed and arrogance has left much of the Irish people demoralised. That is not the vision of 1916, and it is not my vision for Ireland approaching its centenary. And of course, our national conversation needs to be truly national and indeed global. Our diaspora have a stake in our future. So let us begin the work today of structuring a proper engagement on the type of new republic that we want to build. Let us engage without preconditions and engage with those who have previously not had their voices heard. Let us have meetings in every Irish county in the next year. Let us meet every group who has a stake in building a new republic. Remember, the men and women of 1916 came from different backgrounds and different places. They had a vision and they had a purpose. Let the new republic offer hope to those currently under pressure. Let it be based on equality and fairness, and let it be a proper republic with citizens at its core. And as part of this, let us deal with the legacy of the conflict. For too long, this issue has been dodged by the two governments. Proper reconciliation is the key to the future. We have already stated our preferred view that a proper international truth commission be put in place. Others have reservations and others are hiding on the issue. But let us be realistic about the current status quo, which is not working for victims and not working for the wider process. And no amount of HET inquiries or even prosecutions will deal with this issue. And indeed, as some have argued, it is making the task of genuine reconciliation all the harder. The British government shunted the issue onto Eames Bradley and then quietly placed their report on the shelf. And it seems to me that the biggest obstacle to properly dealing with the past is a continued refusal at the very top level of the British system to acknowledge their combatant role in the conflict. And this needs to change. And Republicans also need to realise that dealing with the past will not be an easy process for us. Republicans inflicted much hurt during the conflict, but if we are to build a new republic and a new future, it is necessary and it is a road none of us should be afraid to go down. And indeed, in my experience of recent years, many within the unionist community are up for a journey of reconciliation and dialogue. Tonight, one of those, the Reverend David Latimer from First Derry Presbyterian Church, has demonstrated that by his courageous decision to accept our invitation to address this Ardesh, and I commend him for that. No doubt David will say things tonight which will challenge many of us in this hall, and that's good. And likewise, David will hear things tonight that will challenge his view of the future. And that is key. That is what the national conversation I have spoken about is all about. We don't have all the answers and have never claimed to have all the answers. I believe a new republic can be built, but it will only be built if we take the lead in building it. I trust in the Irish people. I trust in our ability to fulfil the legacy of 1916. And I trust in our ability, and I trust in our vision for the future. 5 years isn't a long time in the history of any nation. But in 5 years, we have already shown the political conditions can be transformed. And my message from here is that Ireland can be transformed in the next 5 years. So join with all of us in making that happen. Gurumila Mayogov. I spoke at the launch of a magnificent Republican publication last night in Coal Island, County Tyrone. And I want to commend everybody involved in the work in putting that together, particularly Jared McGee, who was at the coal face of it. I would commend it to all of you. And of course, when you go to County Tyrone and someone tries to chronicle the history of republicanism in County Tyrone, it's always very hard to know how many centuries back you go. But I do recall being in the Irish Embassy in Rome just a few weeks ago, sorry, a couple of years ago, and was told that the remains of Hugh O'Neill and Rory O'Donnell, who were the earls, lay in a church not far from the embassy. And I went down to the church, and under the two flagstones and the lead up to the altar lie the remains of Hugh O'Neill and Rory O'Donnell. And I couldn't help thinking, when I was standing there, 400 years later, that our island had endured 400 years of conflict. And pledged myself to do everything in my power to try, as a Republican politician, to bring conflict to an end and to plot a peaceful path towards Irish reunification. And over the course of my involvement in the peace process, I have made many friends within the Protestant churches, all the Protestant churches. I've been in all of the Protestant churches. And these friends are lifelong friends. I met David Latimer 5 years ago. And slowly but surely, our relationship got stronger and stronger. Our friendship grew very strong indeed. He is the minister at First Derry Presbyterian Church, which sits proudly on Derry's walls. I can see it from the back of my house, along with many other iconic buildings related to the city of Derry, or as David might call it, Londonderry. First Derry Presbyterian Church was in a terrible state. I'd done a visit to the church with him and pledged myself to work with a team of people to ensure that that church would be restored to its fullest splendor, which earlier this year we managed to achieve, and the church was opened. And David very generously, in a week of firsts, when people talk about the first Sinn Féin Ardesh in Belfast, or the first time a Presbyterian minister would address a Sinn Féin conference, I also had my first. I've been invited to speak to his congregation on the day that the church opened. So David is my friend. We have different allegiances, but that's all right. We have one thing in common. We believe in peace. We believe in moving forward together. We believe in sharing. And it gives me a great, great pleasure to invite him to address you this evening. Gurumila Mayago.
Thank you. My goodness, how can I follow Martin McGuinness? Frankly, I don't think I can, because I see him. Martin, I see you as one of the true great leaders of modern times. And my prayer is that he will be empowered and envisioned to take us forward in the inclusive way that he is committed to. And I hope he gets the support from others from within the other political parties, because it is together that we're going to build the future better and brighter. Martin didn't tell you, but he got me £1.6 million, you know. Wonder what I'm expected to do tonight for that. But I must tell you, a wee story would be all right, wouldn't it? I must tell you about a clergyman who was in a church for the first time, and he wasn't quite sure if the acoustics were just functioning properly. So he spies somebody away back in a corner, and he says to them, "Excuse me, can you hear me all right?" And the person said, "I can," he says, "but I wish I could change places with somebody who can't." "So, do you want to change now?" "I heard you." That's Irish for friends, and I begin intentionally with this word, because that's what I firmly believe, and in my script I'd written, "I firmly believe we are becoming." But since arriving at the waterfront tonight, I have been overwhelmed by the warmth and the magnitude of the welcome that I have received, right from the security men at the barriers as I came in, through the corridors and into this hall. Do you know something? I don't think I would have the same welcome in the General Assembly in Belfast. But, Martin, you and I, as you said a moment or two ago, have been journeying together for the last 5 years. And during that time, ladies and gentlemen, Martin McGuinness and David Latimer have become firm friends who are able to easily relax in each other's company. While our interaction might understandably raise eyebrows among some within both our communities, the reality is you and I, Martin, regard ourselves to be brothers within the same human family, a worldwide diverse family, which, despite all its flaws and imperfections, is loved by God, the maker of everything that lives and moves. Your invitation to me, a Protestant minister, is, I must tell you, forward-looking and timely. I used these words on a couple of interviews this past week, and you know something? Do you see the deluge of messages I have been receiving from both our communities? I have been gobsmacked by it. Only about 5% of a massive number of messages have been negative, and all the rest have been positive, which suggests to me out there, there is a swathe of people who are looking for positive leadership so that together we can go forward. Is it possible, do you think, that the Democratic Unionists could see their way to invite a Catholic priest to address their party conference this year or next? I'd like to think my co-religionists would emulate what you have done, not for cheap publicity, because that's going to take us nowhere. Rather, in recognition, despite our respective Dublin or London preferences, which we have to learn to respect and accept. But despite our differing aspirations, we want to acknowledge that our destinies are tied up together and our futures are bound together, which means, ladies and gentlemen, that neither of us can continue to walk alone. And the more we do together as people on the street and as politicians up on the hill, the better we will shape our shared future. The seeds of division and enmity that have long characterized Catholic and Protestant relations were neither sown in 1968 or in 1921, but probably during the 1609 settlement of Ulster. Mistrust and bad feelings resulting in the colonization of Ireland by Protestant settlers were followed by centuries of political and social segregation. Partitioning Ireland did little to ease sectarian mistrust and separateness between Protestants and Catholics left in the six counties, as each community continued to be defined by its particular religious affiliations, with little mixture between the two groups. Little wonder this part of Ireland descended into a spiral of communal disorder and violence that was to last for decades. Victims of difference. And victims of differences extending back across trackless centuries that have isolated us from one another. It is, with the benefit of historical hindsight, not surprising that our two communities should view each other with suspicion and regard one another as the enemy. Locked into our respective comfort zones of isolation and poor relations, we miserably fail to understand each other and to do anything about each other's grievances. A 1993 report to the General Assembly makes for interesting reading, and I quote, "The Presbyterian Church in Ireland shares the guilt of the majority community in Northern Ireland for tolerating the practice of discrimination in jobs, housing and voting rights, which largely led to the civil rights campaign in the late 60s. Was the penny, albeit 15 years into the troubles, finally starting to drop? Was my community admitting that sins of omission could be as damaging as sins of commission?" I rather like a comment by Marcus Aurelius, the last of the five good emperors, who during the second century wrote, and listen to this, "A wrongdoer is often one who has left something undone, not always one who has done something." Ladies and gentlemen, it is my considered opinion that by our silence and by our actions, we have together contributed to perpetuating the divisions created long ago that progressively plunged us deeper into the chaos and into the turmoil of the past. Can I tell you something? This analysis that I'm sharing with you means there is no one, orange or green, who can lift an accusing finger and apportion blame. And why is that? Because all of us have been part of the problem in some shape or form. And those who like to throw stones from one camp to the other, they're out of order and they're not helping. But let's move the story forward. A drain population located in the north of Ireland, longingly waiting for a streak of light that one day might just break through the clouds and offer a glimmer of hope to soothe their sorrows and heal their wounds, couldn't believe the news that broke on Tuesday, the 8th of May, 2007. This was the story of the most unlikely political marriage between Democratic Unionist and Sinn Féin, along with those potent pictures of Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness standing side by side as the newly elected Deputy First Minister and First Minister of the power-sharing assembly. In those epic scenes that none of us will ever want to forget, Martin, you and Ian lit a light of hope, enabling Catholics, Protestants, Nationalists, Unionists, Republicans, and Loyalists to envision the snow melting and the winter becoming summer. No longer would either community need to drink from the awful cup of bitterness. No longer would it be necessary for either community to blame and endlessly complain about each other. No longer would anyone, British or Irish, need to wallow in the valley of despair. Certainly not. Because two very different communities at long last could anticipate standing as equals on the warm threshold of a better and a brighter new day. But moving the story even a wee bit further forward, we can identify what can only be described as groundbreaking strides bravely taken by the top layer of our government. Well, how else can you explain the First Minister's decision to visit a Catholic church for the first time in his life? And the attendance by the Deputy First Minister at the same church on the same day, and they were both there for the funeral mass of murdered PSNI officer on that very sad day. GAA officials agreeably passed Constable Ronan Kerr's coffin to PSNI officers. Clearly, history was being made, and the narrative, I want you to note, was being recorded not on separate pages, but on the same page. And that, ladies and gentlemen, had never happened before. And we cannot and will not overlook President McAleese and Queen Elizabeth standing side by side in Dublin's Garden of Remembrance to honour those who died fighting for Irish independence and remaining together not just for one national anthem, but for the both of them. Makes you think, does it not, that two very different ladies with different political allegiances were showing all of us that it is time to shake free the restricting chains of history. During this weekend, you will necessarily discuss a whole raft of issues that relate to people of all ages, such as education, health, housing, inward investment, justice, and social equality. While progress in each of these areas will be beneficial, it must be emphasized that no political party in the North can dismiss searching for that hitherto elusive ingredient, which is nothing more or nothing less than salve for the hurting people who live in every council area and in each assembly constituency. This means, does it not, that despite all our progress and our future prospects, everything that will be achieved will never fully be appreciated or enjoyed by everyone. And that's given how we postpone turning to our dark and terrible past. As a clergyman, I only wish that I could provide the hurting people in both of our communities with a ready mix and stir formula that would relieve their pain and wipe away their tears. Regretfully, this is beyond the ability of any mortal individual to deliver, although it could be helpful for broken and bruised people to be informed that it is acceptable for bereaved Protestants to articulate a story of the past, and for bereaved Catholics to also articulate a story of the past. Now, while both sets of stories will contain significant differences, each must be recognized as real and as a personal story without an if or a but. Therefore, rather than airbrush personal stories of hurt, there is a collective requirement for a spirit of maturity to be fostered whereby it will be possible for different stories relative to the past to be fairly acknowledged. This could offer more than a modicum of comfort to our hurting people living in both Catholic and Protestant neighborhoods, although I very much doubt it will be sufficient, which prompts me to suggest, and I'm moving on to the wavelength that Martin was on just a moment or two ago, because I'm thinking that within all your deliberations as within Sinn Féin to try and address this painful and difficult area, it makes me wonder if some framework could be devised that would lead us at some point in the future to what I'm calling a countrywide day for hope and transformation. Such a solitary event, we only need one. Such a solitary and public event would, I believe, provide space and time for everybody involved in the conflict to acknowledge the pain that each has inflicted, recognizing we have hurt each other and that we have been hurt by each other, and that we all need to forgive would undeniably be liberating for all 32 counties, I think, of this island. Our religious and our political differences will be prevailed, and we don't want to deny them. They're special and precious to us. And they shouldn't be sufficient to make one side fearful of the other. So with our prevailing political and religious differences, these, compared to the benefits of peace, I think we have to acknowledge, make our differences relatively trivial. Therefore, for the sake of our children, what will we do? We will keep moving forward together. We must not let the peace die. We will not let the peace die. And with a man at the helm like Martin, we can be sure of that. With Almighty God's help, ladies and gentlemen, we can all have a distinguished future. And what will happen in that distinguished future? And I'm not dreaming. This is not utopian, unrealizable hope I'm sharing with you. This is realistic hope. With God's help, we can have a distinguished future where we will work and grow in harmony, and not just for a particular cause, but for the good of everybody living and breathing, whether it's the North, Northern Ireland, or the six counties. So, a Celtic blessing for you. How about that? For all of you, my friends, Republicans, Nationalists, and Catholics, from me, a Protestant, a Presbyterian, and a Unionist, but together we are people made in the image of God. And it's as people that I share this lovely blessing with. So listen to this, because it's for you, and indeed it is for all our people. May the Lord show his mercy upon us. May the light of his presence be our guide. May he guard us and uphold us. May his spirit be ever at our side. When we sleep, may his angels watch over us. When we wake, may he fill us with his grace. May we love him and serve him all our days. Then in heaven, may we see his face. Through Jesus Christ our Lord, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Add more art. Have I got it right?
David, thank you very much for those thought-provoking and inspiring words.